This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, folks. Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're with Julian, Xiaoning and Sharitz, and we're running a poll today. We're asking, what is the biggest incentive for overseas Malaysians to return to work in Malaysia and why? And the options are family, job, salary, a sense of national service, and other things like food and weather. We'll be speaking to a labour economist about brain drain today at 7:45 a.m. So head on to our Twitter, BFM Radio, to vote. Now, Sukuk is big business in Malaysia, and according to Moody's, Sukuk issuance is expected to grow by 6% to around 540 billion ringgit this year. It said that although projections were slightly down from the 8% increase in 2018, but it would still mark the fifth consecutive year of expansion.
So Moody's full-year expectations reflect robust issuance of about $87 billion during the first half of 2019. Now, this is spreading across short- and long-term instrument, and it also expects that the second half Sukuk issuance volumes to moderate to around 43 billion. Strong issuance in the first 6 months. This has reduced sovereign as well as corporate funding needs.
Meanwhile, Moody's added that the government and corporate entities in Malaysia and the Gulf Cooperation Council countries, particularly Saudi Arabia, are expected to continue issuing it regularly. And on top of it, there have been new entrants and green Sukuk, which would stimulate in the issuance.
We have somebody from Moody's speaking to us, Nitish Brotna Gawala, Vice President of Senior Credit Officer in Moody's. Thanks for joining us, Nitish. So what are the latest developments and trends in Sukuk issuances?
If you look at the pillars for the growth in the first half of 2017, there were three strong pillars for growth. And the first driver for the growth came from the GCC region, where issuances grew by 9%. And most importantly, in the Southeast Asian region, where the growth rate of Sukuk issuance was 41%, and the total issuances in Southeast Asia, including Malaysia, Indonesia, was around $53 billion worth of Sukuk issued. The third market where we see Sukuk issuances growing was Turkey, where it grew by 300% from a very low base of around $1.5 billion to around $8 billion in the first half of 2019. So essentially, the growth in the industry in the first half has been strong. We do expect that overall growth story within the Sukuk issuance market will remain strong, more on the medium and long term as well.
And what are the challenges for Sukuk to be accepted as a mainstream in capital markets, as it is still niche?
Yes, you're right. It's still pretty much niche, but we have seen that a lot of new issuers coming into the market. So I think there is complexity involved in Sukuk instruments in general, but we've seen that this is slowly becoming an acceptable in terms of a mainstream capital market issuance or capital market instrument. So we have seen countries like UK, Luxembourg, Hong Kong, South Africa, where they don't have, which are non-Muslim majority countries, are also issuing Sukuk. So I think there still remains a lot of ground to cover, but we've started seeing a lot of diversification from different countries issuing into the Sukuk market or broadly reflecting into the Islamic finance market. And we've also seen the countries and regions like GCC and Southeast Asia, where the sovereigns have been extremely pushing hard in terms of growing this industry in their respective countries. One of the challenges now reflecting in terms of where we do see there is great potential and we have not seen a lot of issuance activity is within the corporate space. We've seen that in terms of corporate issuances, corporates tend to be more opportunistic. And over the years, they have tended to borrow more from the conventional space. Sukuk instruments tend to be more complex and more legal documentation is quite heavy. And at the same time, it requires a lot of time in terms of executing a Sukuk transactions. These could be certain factors behind why we haven't seen a lot of corporates tapping the Sukuk market, and that could be an area where there could be a future growth potential.
Meanwhile, countries like Turkey, Pakistan, Qatar, Oman, and regions in Africa are also getting into the Sukuk game. So how credible are they as a competitor to an established Sukuk issuer like Malaysia?
I think that's a very good question. But Malaysia by far remains the largest issuer within the Sukuk market. The market share in the first half of 2019, Malaysia had 41% market share in terms of the overall Sukuk issuance. And the second was Saudi Arabia with 15% market share. So I think there's still a lot of difference between Malaysia, and Malaysia by far is leading in that space, with second Saudi Arabia and Indonesia as well pushing strongly in terms of their Sukuk market activity. So overall, we do see new entrants like the countries you mentioned also pushing and growing their Islamic finance footprint within their countries. But I think it still remains a large gap, and Indonesia and Saudi Arabia seems to be much more closer in terms of the market share as compared to the other countries you mentioned.
And speaking of Malaysia, the issuance of Sukuk has mainly been in local currency. But for it to be a true market leader, would this need to shift towards more global currency issuance?
So from our perspective, I think we have seen strong domestic currency issuances within Malaysia, which is healthy, which is good. I think essentially what we haven't seen and what will be drive the growth in the industry is more global currency issuances, like more dollar issuances out of these countries. But essentially, I think it's not about a shift in from local to domestic. I think both need to happen at the same time. Issuers need to develop their local domestic markets at the same time, which is healthy for the issuances and healthy from an issuer perspective. But at the same time, international currency issuances would give more, let's say, supply for investors to invest and diversify their portfolios.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning. That was Nitish Bhagnagawala, Vice President, Senior Credit Officer, Moody's. I thought it was quite interesting. He said that corporations gravitate more towards conventional bond issuances because it's much easier to do, whereas the Sukuk process is more complicated. And I think that there is a role for technology to play in this kind of situation, just to expedite the process and make it a lot easier.
Well, part of the complication is that in every jurisdiction, right, the definition of what is a Sharia compliance Sukuk bond differs.
Oh, right.
So Malaysia has one definition, Indonesia has one definition, and even within the Arab states, they have their own definition. So unlike typical bond papers, which have quite standardized terms, every country comes up with their own terms, which means that you need more legal fees, it's more time consuming. So probably that explains why corporates are hesitant to issue Sharia papers. Because I did have a conversation with Bashar Al-Nato, Global Head of Islamic Finance at Fitch Ratings, which you can catch, it was a breakfast grill, which you can catch on the BFM app or on Spotify. And he said that these are one of the challenges that the Islamic capital markets face. There's a lack of standardization. Also, there's a bit of this gaps in the capital market ecosystem. Because not every product which we see in conventional capital markets, for example, swaps and forwards, are available in Islamic capital markets.
So, I mean, despite that complication, right, the whole, you know, the legality of getting into Sukuk, still, so I find it quite surprising when I heard that the trend is growing up in Europe as well. UK, Luxembourg, they're going, they too have started developing Sukuk issuance in that sense.
A lot of these non-Islamic markets are actually getting into the game as well. Now, the other news is the Axiata-Telenor merger, which CEO Tan Sri Jamaluddin Ibrahim said that is on track, but I think different media are covering it differently. The Malaysian Reserve, for example, states that this is still on track, but the Edge Financial Daily actually highlights the employees, right? There's a nationalistic focus in this, in a sense that they need to take care of the interest of employees.
Yeah, so I mean, this is one of the biggest M&A and one of the most complex ones in the last 20 years, where the whole region except for North Asia are involved, and we're talking about 14 large entities across 9 countries. So, and as you mentioned, that it's national interest as well as staff interest, and So he's assuring that there's no significant changes about what has been previously said about the deal and, you know, in particular, shareholding structure, which also will not go through general change.
But this is not something that was not already said in earlier days, right? Mm. Because they did come out, they were asked by the media, Jamaluddin was asked by the media that whether there will be any job cuts. And they said, no, in fact, Malaysia stands to benefit because they might be bringing some of the call centers back to Malaysia. They'll be doing kind of a joint offices with Telenor. So I'm not sure what's happening now.
Yeah, I think I sort of feel that the hand of the government is in this. Not necessarily a bad thing, but certainly this is a mixture of policy, politics, as well as business, right? Because the government needs to take care of the staff and to create employment. And Axiata is, of course, owned by Khazanah, which is a government-held entity. And meanwhile, Khazanah also has an offer on the table for toll roads as well, right?
Yes.
Which has put a spanner in the works to the taking over of the toll roads from Gamuda.
Yeah, that seemed that deadline, right? Originally, the government was supposed to take the six highways from Gamuda private for the value of 6.2 billion ringgit, but that deadline has now been pushed to October.
Mm. Yep, and the price tag has been reduced slightly as well, the price tag from Khazanah. I think this is definitely a surge for a win-win deal of a self-paying deal when you take over the toll roads, and at the same time, you can't also shortchange the toll road owners of the fare valuation. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.